Whew. If you got any preaching in you, that ought to bring it out, ain't it? Just got news from Alma that Tyrone made it in from a two-week mission trip in Brazil, 5 o'clock this morning, so we're glad that he's home safely. Also, we're glad to see Chris back in his rightful place back home from his little trip to D.C., so he'll get that right before it's over. You probably heard the story about the lady who came home, and there was this older, tired-looking dog that had wandered into her yard. And she, as she looked at him, she could tell it was obvious that he was well taken care of. His belly was full, and he had a nice collar on. And he calmly walked over to her, and she gave him a few pats on the head, and whenever she walked in her front door, the dog just followed her right in her house. And he just made himself right at home. He walked down to the end of the hall, curled up in a corner, and went to sleep. About an hour later, he woke up and went to the front door and just stood there patiently until she opened the door, and then he left. Well, this happened the next afternoon, the same thing. And it continued on and off for several weeks. And finally, she was curious. And so she pinned a note to his collar, and it said, "I would like to find out who is the owner of this wonderful, sweet dog and ask if you're aware that he comes over to my house almost every afternoon and takes a nap." And so the next day, the dog arrived again. He had a note pinned to his collar, a separate note, and it said, "He lives in a home with 6 children, two under the age of three, and he's trying to catch up on his sleep. Can I come with him tomorrow?" In our last lesson, we noted that it's hard to be a kid these days. But I have to say also that being a parent is probably one of the most difficult things that any of us will ever attempt in our life. After all, they don't come with an instruction book, do they? Well, actually, they do. But you know how we are with instruction books. We don't read them till we messed up, do we? I mean, there's just something innate within us that we just don't like to sit down and read the instruction book. And by the time that we realize that we've messed up, sometimes it's too late. The bent twig may have become a tree. There's an interesting and familiar passage in Luke chapter 2, verse 52, and it summarizes Jesus' childhood. And every one of you are familiar with it. It says, "And Jesus grew in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and man." Parents, here's a little insight that tells us the areas in which we need to consciously focus in rearing our children. There are 4 areas in which children are lacking: mentally, physically, socially, and spiritually. And mentally, in wisdom, Jesus grew in wisdom. Children don't know everything. As a matter of fact, they come here not knowing anything. And whatever they know, you're going to be the one to teach them. Physically, Jesus grew in stature. Children eat the wrong stuff. They don't ever want to go to bed when they're supposed to, and we have to teach them how to discipline their bodies. Socially, he grew in favor with man. Kids don't know how to get along with people. Here's your little parent quiz. What's the second word that most children learn? Now, what's the first one? The first one, and dads, don't tell your wives that I'm telling you this. I'm going to tell you a little secret here. If you're really smart, you'll teach your child to say, "Mama." Now, you don't know. There's no way you can know that on the first child. But I'm telling you, I know some stuff about this, so I'm giving you a little tip here. And the reason is, and I know what this stuff is, you know, you run around when your wife's not here and you say to that baby, "Dad, dad, 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 dad." And the mama does the same thing. She's trying to get that to be the first word they say. But you learn that at 2 o'clock in the morning, mama sounds a lot better than dada. Okay? So just take that little tip there. So the first word that the child learns is mom, and the second one is a toss-up. It's either mine or no. Mine or no. And neither one of those words is going to endear them to anybody, anytime, anywhere. And so children have to learn socially and then spiritually in favor with God. Your children are going to get their attitude about God by watching you and listening to you. And we might like to deny that sometime later in life, but that's where they get their attitude. Our text for our lesson, is that me doing that? What is that? Our text for our lesson is Ephesians 6:4 and Colossians 3:21. We've been drawing this whole series that we've entitled Family Feuding and How to End It from Ephesians chapter 6, verse 4, and then companion Colossians chapter 3. And this is our last in our series. And it's not last because I've said everything that I need to say, or maybe even want to say, but just because you got to end it somewhere, sometime. But I'd like to look at some of the words in Ephesians 6:4 and Colossians 3:21, because these words provide us insights into helping us rear godly children. Fathers, it starts out, both of them do. Fathers, pater, in the same word in both texts there, context. And right here at the very outset may be the most important thing that I could say in this lesson. Because this is addressed to fathers. Now, in all fairness, there are a few times in the New Testament when the word pater, father, is used to mean parents. There are a few times when it's used. The word for mother is mater. And so it is specifically a word for fathers. But I really do think that he intends this instruction to be primarily aimed at the fathers here. And the reason that I say that is if you'll look in both contexts, interestingly, he just, a verse or two before what we have as our lesson text, in both contexts, he will use the word parents. And there is a specific word for parents. And so I'm saying he knows what the word for parents is, and he didn't use that in this particular instance. He used it. He said, fathers, you do this. And I'm saying that one of the biggest failings that we in the United States of America and in our society have done in families is we have relegated the raising of children to mothers. And dads have just kind of like a bull and their calf. We just show up occasionally and don't take the real responsibility of rearing our children. And God aims this directly at dads. But you see, we think that our job is to go to work and spend all our time at work, and we bring home the bacon, and then we tell how to fry it, and that's pretty much our job. And mom's got the responsibility of raising the children. Now, I'm not saying that parents do not share the responsibility. It would be a stupid thing to say. But he aims this directly at us as fathers, that we have the responsibility to train our children, to bring them up. And he says, do not exasperate your children. Instead, bring them up in the training and instruction of the Lord. Fathers, do not embitter your children, or they'll become discouraged. So, fathers, if we want to have a godly family, it's time for us to step up to the plate. It's way past time for us to step up to the plate as the spiritual leaders in our homes. And in both cases, he gives a little warning here. It's not a little one, but don't exasperate your children, fathers. Don't embitter your children. Now, they're different words, and sometimes we'll talk about the shades of meaning, but let's, for the sake of today's lesson and time, combine them and say that he's saying, do not provoke or stir your children up to anger. And then he says, bring them up. And the word bring them up is a single word. It means to nourish. It's the same word that he used in chapter 5, verse 29, where he talked about how we treat our bodies. We nourish them. We treat our bodies tenderly and with care and lovingly. And he says, bring them up in the instruction and the training of the Lord. Those are companion words. One word means to train by word. You sit your child down and you instruct them. You tell them. And the other word means to train by action. And it's even a little more specific than that. What it literally means is to chastise with blows. Do you hear it? You bring them up by instructing them and then enforcing that instruction. Now, I don't want you to leave here and say that I've given you permission to abuse your child. Just go back to last lesson and reference our comments about both positive and negative motivation. That positive motivation will take you to a point, and then you apply some additional motivation at that point. By the way, the Bible says, spare the rod and what? Wrong. Do you know the Bible doesn't say that? Now, you can almost get in a fight over that verse. People will swear the Bible says, spare the rod, spoil the child. Your assignment for next week is find that verse and bring it to me. Now, I'm aware, and some of you will bring passages that say something similar to that, but that is not a quote from the Bible, as much as we may think it is. Let's draw three priorities for Christian parents. Number one, provide a secure environment in your home. And that involves, first of all, providing for physical needs. 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 8 says, if a man does not provide for his own family, then he's worse. He has, number one, denied the faith, and he's worse than the King James Version says, an infidel or an unbeliever. And so we're to provide physically for our families. And I don't really have to stay here too long because that's not too much of a problem, except we overprovide. That's really the problem about the physical in our homes, is that we have a tendency to overemphasize material things. But we're to provide for the physical things for our family. And secondly, we're to provide a home with loving parents present. We are to provide a home with loving parents present. There are many children who live in homes where they rarely see their parents. And you know, one of the childhood fears, we call it, one of the fears that's very natural to children is being left alone. I mean, it's just a terror. It is the thought of being left alone strikes terror in the heart of most children. And if they are left alone, they're going to resent it. Someday we'll have a lesson, Lord willing, about how you embitter your children or how you cause them to be frustrated. These words that are here, we'll just touch on it a little bit, but here's one of them right here. If you leave your child alone, they're going to resent it, and they're going to find ways to show you down the road. And there are some homes who, even when the parents are home, maybe the children wish they weren't because all they see is anger and quarreling and fighting in the home. And so a second priority for Christian parents is that we're to provide a home with loving parents who are present. And then a third priority is be consistent. Do you realize that nothing good flourishes in an inconsistent environment? Nothing good flourishes in an inconsistent environment. Do you like to be around somebody that you never know what kind of mood they're going to be in? They enter the room and you're just trying to read their face. You're trying to read their body language to see if you should speak or not speak. It's not very pleasant to be a child, grow up in a home that you have to try to read your parents' body language to see if you need to go get in your room and close your door. Do you like to be around somebody who keeps changing the rules? And they tell you one thing one time and something else another time. You want to embitter your child? Keep changing the rules. They'll get bitter on you. Or how much respect do you have for somebody who says, do what I say and not what I do? You know what that is, right? That's the hypocrite's code. God is our example, as always, in how to be a parent. He provides for our physical needs. Do not worry about your life, he said, what you will eat or drink. And do not worry about your body, what you will wear. If you pursue me, my kingdom, my righteousness, I'll take care of all these things for you. He He's a good father in that way. Also, he never leaves us alone. He's promised, I never will I leave you. Never will I forsake you. And he's always consistent. God is the same yesterday, what? Today and forever. He's the same. You can depend on that. And then, besides providing a secure environment for our children, we need to always deliberately teach them about God. And this takes some practice in our life. I mean, everything that happens in our life, we need to move it toward God. You're driving down the road and you see these blue bonnets, you know, that are so beautiful on the roadside, and somebody in the car comments about how beautiful they are. You need to say something about how wonderful God is to provide that for us and how God loves beauty. Everything, you need to move toward God and make that a point in your life that you consistently do that. Everything points toward God. And that's going to give your child a basis for their life. And you see, this is what he's talking about when he says, fathers, bring your children up in the nurture and the admonition to teach them. This is that instruction part. That's what God instructed Israel in Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 6 and 7. He says, always remember these commands I give you today. Be sure to teach them to your children. Talk about these commands when you sit in your house, when you walk down the road. Talk about them when you lie down and when you get up. Move everything in your life toward God and let your children see and hear that. There's a rather obscure commandment that a lot of people don't know about. And it says, whenever you're in your chariot, bring along a songbook and sing along the way. Now, some people don't know about that. But that's really something that you can do for your children, that there's kind of this time, and now we've got all these little movies that we hook up to entertain our kids. Well, sometimes turn all that stuff and the radio and all that stuff off and just sing. Sing about God. It makes a difference in your children's life. My kids used to gripe about the fact that I had a couple of songbooks in every vehicle that we have, and, you know, we'd be on a trip and I'd pull one out and they would groan initially because they're supposed to. It's what kids are supposed to do. And so they did their job. And then we would sing. And they love singing. And if you'll notice, I'm kind of proud of the fact my daughters all know how to sing pretty well. And some personal advice about rules in your home. Have as few as possible. Don't have any rule that you don't need. Too many rules angers, frustrates. Just have the rules that you need to have. And sometimes we might need to sit down and just kind of think about what rules we have in our home, and we might need to pare them down a bit. If you don't need it, don't have it. And don't just have arbitrary rules. The reason for a rule. Don't let it be arbitrary. We find ourselves having rules in our homes because that's the rules that we had when we grew up. Well, maybe they're good and maybe they're not. Look at them together. You and your wife, you and your husband, sit down and look at those rules together. And ask yourself if you really need that rule. And if you don't, get rid of it. But if you do, enforce it. It's really, really important. You know, there's another obscure passage here. It says, be ready to give an answer to every child that asketh you the reason behind the rule. Now, a child has a right to know. And they ask why. I know that. And at some point, I'm not saying this never acceptable to say because I said so. I'm not saying that you never, ever say that. But if that's all you ever say, then they're not going to respect those rules too much. We need to tie our rules to God. It's really important. Jesus said, I don't say anything except what the Father tells me to say. And he had some power, didn't he? He had some authority. And what we as parents need to be aware of is we're just reflecting God's rules in our home. And that should really impact what rules we have and how we feel about those rules. Are you enforcing your rules? Are you enforcing God's rules? You see, arbitrary rules provoke children to anger. And if you just say yes and no, and you're not consistent, and this will be my next point, consistently enforce the rules that you do have. And let me say this, another little insight right here. Parents, your relationship to your child is not a friendship relationship. It is a parent-child relationship. There will be time for the friendship later in life if you do it right. But if your attitude is that you want to be your child's best friend, you're going to mess up. You're not your child's best friend. If you are, that's sad for both of you. Now, if that happens as an adult, that's a great thing. But if you impose that on your child, and what you're really doing is you're making them your best friend. You're telling yourself you're doing it for them, but you're doing it for you. And if you want to be this real cool mom, this real cool dad, you better watch your step. Your relationship with your child is not friendship. It's parent-child. What you're doing is you're teaching your child about authority and how to submit to authority and how to do so with the right attitude. And how to realize that this is really the way that we're supposed to live our life. If you want to frustrate your child, then you be inconsistent with your enforcement of a rule. Here's what happens when you're inconsistent. Every time you say no to your child, in their mind, they are thinking they could have said yes. If you're not consistent in your enforcement of rules, every time you say no, that child is thinking, you could have said yes because you have said yes before. And so what do? They start making your life miserable trying to get you to say yes. And they whine and they complain and they manipulate and they try every way that they can to change your mind because they know you've taught them that if they harass you long enough, you're going to give up and say yes. Am I right or am I not? I'm telling you, that's what happens, and the child gets to the point that the child's in control of the home. And the parent saying no doesn't mean anything except everybody's going to be miserable until they say yes. Be consistent in enforcing the rules that you have in your home. And when you're not consistent, and when they can't get you to say yes, they'll resent you. But if your yay is yay and your nay is nay, and you tie that yay and that nay with God, and when they come to you and they say, Dad, why can't I do so and so? And you go, at least on occasion, you go and you open your Bible up and you say, let me show you why. And they may or they may not agree with your interpretation of it and your application of it. But at least they know that you've got some reason. It's not just some arbitrary reason because you didn't get to when you were a kid. Because if that's the way that you make decisions and enforce them or not in your home, then you're going to have a child who's going to rebel against your authority. And on this consistency thing, as conscientiously as you might try, you're going to make some mistakes. And when you do, do what you tell them to do. Say, I'm sorry, I was wrong. You don't lose ground by saying, I'm sorry, I was wrong. You gain ground. You gain respect. And if you don't, then you're teaching your children that when they make a mistake, they should try to hide it or they should lie about it. Because that's what you're doing. Parents, if you listen to God and do it right, you know what your children will learn? They will learn that submission is a good thing. It's not a bad word. That's what this whole series of lessons has been about. Everybody submits. Even Dad. Even Mom. Everybody submits to a God-given role. And when they learn that submission is a good thing, and they learn to submit with the right attitude, then you have provided them a basis for every relationship they're going to have for the rest of their life, for their relationship to government authority, for their relationship to their husband or their wife, their future husband or their wife, to their relationship with their children. You have provided them with a basis that's going to work for them for the rest of their lives. And if you don't, then you're going to have a frustrated, rebellious child on your hands. And one day they're not going to be under your authority. And they're going to teach you some lessons that you failed to teach them. And you're not going to like what they teach you. Because if you left them alone and they became frustrated or bitter or angry, or if you had all of these rules and you were inconsistent in them, or you had rules that you shouldn't have had, and you enforce those rules on them, then someday when they get far enough away from you that you can't reach them, you can't spank them, you can't do this to them, then they've got the bit in their teeth. They're going to show you something. They're going to give back to you what they feel like that you gave to them. And you know what? It's going to destroy every relationship, or at least undermine every relationship that they'll have for the rest of their life. I know that this works. And I'm going to give you a little illustration. It's going to sound arrogant, I know. I don't mean for it to, but I want to use it anyway. Because it just so happened that one of my grown children called me recently about something that was going on in her life. And we talked about it, and she asked my advice, and I gave her my advice. And whenever we finished and I was pulling the phone away to hang it up, I heard the word daddy. And it was in a completely different tone. It was with tears. And I put the phone back up to my ear and she said, "Are you disappointed in me?" And I've got to tell you that that phone call was worth my whole life. Stand and sing.
Have you a heart that's weary, tending a load of care?
Are you a soul that's seeking rest from the burden?